them all. Step right up. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 120. Howdy, everybody. Portal Game Podcast is a podcast that's a product of a store called The Portal, located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. Portal Game Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. And this episode, number 120, is entitled, "That's Because a Droid Don't Rip People's Arms Out of Their Sockets When They Lose." We're going to talk about losing streaks today on this episode, as well as review a whole pile of games. Hi, everybody. It's great to talk to you on our 120th episode. I've now said that three times. I'm your host, The Brant, and with me is...
your co-host, Kathy.
Woohoo! She's back. It feels like forever to me with everybody, even myself. Had this horrible voice loss and I don't know, all that chaos. And now it's like my voice is back and spring is out and we're getting ready to go on vacation. And I don't know, I feel much more positive than prior.
Yeah, the last one I was on, I was all alone.
That's right. You had to do hosting duties because I could not speak. Thank you for that. And all of those things. So, yeah, we're getting ready to do a little trip to Pennsylvania with the fam.
Yep.
And I'm going to try to limit myself to 10 games that we're going to bring, which means we'll play 2 or 0.
And you'll bring 20.
But it's more the space in the car that's the key. So maybe bringing some smaller games is the element. Plus, got to bring a solo game.
Yeah,
something I can play on my own because I'm not a phone gamer and all that. So we shall see. All right, what's new with you? Anything, Kath?
No.
Okay.
Same stuff. I'm working and... yep, all
came,
the same.
Come out to the store a couple times and played.
Yeah.
It was a little while ago, but that was cool. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and all those things. All right, I guess we'll jump in. We've got a whole pile of games to review. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
We have two piles.
Two piles.
All right. Let's jump through. We're going to start with Haven. So we're literally sitting in front of the pile of games so that we can kind of remember them and whatnot. So Haven is a game designed by Al Siegert, and it's from Red Raven Games, so it's illustrated by Ryan Lockett, kind of the Renaissance man of board gaming. And he does the art, he designs games, he did molding of models, all sorts of things, and he's like a prolific trumpet player. I got to talk with him for a while at Gen Con. Really interesting. And he's super mild-mannered. So maybe he's a superhero. Mild-mannered always feels like a superhero trait. Alright, we played Haven, which is interesting. It's a two-player only game. And I guess the place you have to start with Haven is the art, right?
Oh yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, every Ryan Lockett game is always about the art. And this one is kind of the forest versus the city. One player is the city, the other player is the forest, although it's a very foresty theming game. The box is green, the board is green, so when you're the city, which I believe I was the city player, you really feel like you're invading the forest. Like, you feel like you're a jerk.
That's right. And you are.
And you are. the forest creatures are, you know, elk and owls and druid people and things like that, and the city folk are machines and people with swords and all sorts of things. So anyway, what are you doing in this game? It's basically area control on the board, although you're playing the game, you're scoring the points on the board and getting the area control, but you're actually playing the game on a series of cards or locations next to the board. So on your turn, you're going to play some cards from your hand. You can play kind of event cards, which you get once per turn, or you can play character cards down two locations, and then eventually you're going to have to play an offering card. And there's three locations. There's a water location, there's an earth location, and there's a leaf location, I guess.
Plant
location. And once, between the players, there's three symbols, that location will kind of have a battle. And in the battles, you're going to determine who has the highest value, and who has the highest strength. And value has a different name that I can't remember. Anyway, but value is kind of like in tune with that, like, location, and strength is pure, like, combat. So then whoever wins the combat is going to win the space on the board where there are elementals of those types, and you win control of that location. The other player is going to get the card if they have, like, a higher total. If you win both, then the other person gets to draw a card. It's like a little catch-up mechanism for an event. And the events are relatively powerful. They were usually a pretty big deal. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, on the board, the little elementals are moving around, and you're trying to gain control of a majority of the locations around each of these havens, which is where the name gets its game gets its name. And when you control a haven, you get to put a token out on the board. And once all those spaces are filled up and one of the elementals leaves the board, the game is over. You're going to evaluate points based on the number of havens. You're going to evaluate points on the little tiles that you gather and cards that you gather. And there's kind of a majority for each of those. Person with the most points wins. I believe you skunked me in this game.
Yes.
What did you think about Haven? How did you feel about it?
I liked it. It was simple. I enjoyed the art, so that was nice. I don't know how often. It's not one that I finished playing. I was like, oh, I want to play this again soon. But it was enjoyable.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I really liked it, but in the pile of two-player games, it's hard to pull back out. I mean, I feel like for us, our favorite two-player games are CCGs, TCGs and CCGs. We tend to like Ashes and Keyforge, Star Wars back in the day. I mean, other than playing a two-player, like, Euro.
Yeah.
2 or 3 hour game when we have the time for that. Through the Ages would be another favorite two-player of ours, although that's not two-player only.
Right.
But we're not even really, like, Patchwork. We don't really play that together anymore. We did play a lot of Seven Wonders Duel. That would be one that we played a good number of. But it kind of sinks in that pile. When you have two, there are certain games that rise to the top, right?
Right.
And this one, I wouldn't say it sits in the middle. The artwork definitely sets it apart. It was fun. It felt unique.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And what you were doing. So, felt worthwhile. But ultimately, that two-player, that field feels especially crowded.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Well, there's so many games that play two to however many. So it's almost any game you could play.
And designers are doing a lot better on making the two to anything play well with two.
Right.
Not just three and four. And not be, oh, you need a dummy player or this complex mechanism. What was the game we played? Pop Wow? And we just couldn't handle the two player. It was like, it was easy to put things out. But then tiebreakers were so confusing. And it just wasn't there. I don't mean to down that game because it's fun with three and four. But with two, it was like, I'm just happy to play this at three and four.
Right.
I don't need it to be a two-player game. There's so many games otherwise. That's Haven, Red Raven Games. All right, next up we got to play Dice Forge Rebellion. This is the expansion for Dice Forge. Dice Forge is kind of a guilty pleasure style game for me. Like, it's just so cool to build the dice.
It is really cool, yeah.
And so the biggest drawback for Dice Forge was always just, there's basically two sets of cards in the box, and it's not long before you've played them both twice, and you're like, okay, I could keep playing this game, but I would definitely want more. And man, did they pack it into the Rebellion expansion.
Yeah, there's a ton in there.
Yeah, so the Rebellion expansion has, like, a double-sided board for two different scenarios. So there's the Rebellion, the Titans versus the Gods, which we actually haven't gotten a chance to play yet.
Right.
And then there's the Queen's Path or Journey or something along those lines. I'm trying to look it up quickly. The Goddess module that you get to play. I think it is Athena. So they added cards for those that you get to add. Well organized in the box, new plates, die faces, tokens are all well organized again. And then they added, you know, at least two more sets of cards that you can use. Really, it's four more sets of cards, and it just opened the game up. Every time you play, it's going to feel different. Now, some people might not like that. They may want to play the same game and kind of master that mode. But no way. I want to play a different one every time.
Yeah.
in terms of that. So how did you feel about the Goddess module or just Dice Forge Rebellion in general?
Yeah, it was good. I felt like it added something that the game was missing. It gave not another path to victory, but another source of points and die faces and the different things you can access.
Yeah, and it gives us a celestial die.
Yes, I couldn't remember what that one was called.
Yeah, there's an extra die you can roll. It's like a bonus, and it gives you, like, big bonuses, 12 gold, which will fill up your gold track, or just grab a die face and throw it down, or choose a major resource. Now, at the end of the day, Dice Forge is never going to escape the dice.
Right.
It's going to be random. One player could win because they roll better. That's not why I'm playing the game.
Right.
I'm playing the game because it's so fun to build my dice. It reminds me of Dominion back in the day. Absolutely one person will beat the other person, but I have no idea. We get to the end of the game and it's like, oh, you won. I had fun.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't worry about winning and losing in this game. I just want to try cool stuff and roll things. So far, this is my expansion of the year.
So, yeah, I think it's great.
I just want to play this game. I'm carrying this with me all the time, trying to get it played with people and having a bunch. Now, one thing people are going to ask is, does the expansion fit in the box? It does not, but you've got to remember that Dice Forge has an amazing insert, and the expansion has an amazing insert. So they built it so the expansion box goes up against the regular box, and everything's there and available for you. So you don't need little cups on the table, you don't need bowls, you don't need anything extra. It's all there for you and well thought out. So it's more to carry around. You've got two boxes to carry around now, but then it's all set up. You don't need anything extra. So
yeah.
Yeah, this is awesome. I think of this expansion as like an expansion that saved the game. It's not Dice Forge was so bad and it fixed the game, but mm-hmm. It just made it like, now I want to play it that much more. It's not going to sit on the shelf. It's not going to be properly stored away like my game should be.
No, it will be carried around. Now we'll see it everywhere throughout the house.
Nice. Next up is Res Arcana. Res Arcana is from Sandcastle Games. More importantly, from Tom Lehman. Tom Lehman made Race, Roll, For the Galaxy, New Frontiers, which is the next one. And so this is kind of a, like, magic-style game, would you say? Like, you're playing wizards and witches and alchemists, right? Kind of in that magical vein.
Yes, yes.
What do you think of the artwork here?
I like it. It's really pretty. It's eye-catching. It's colorful.
Yeah, it's kind of that classic fantasy artwork. Here. So Res Arcana, I would really describe it as right sitting in the middle of Jump Drive and Roll for the Galaxy. That's where it feels like in terms of complexity. So it's a race game. You're trying to get 10 points. And what you do on a turn is you get a series of cards. You get your own deck, actually, at the start of the game. And then you're gaining all of these elemental resources. One of them is gold, but gold is kind of separate. And eventually you're trying to trade in gold to get monuments and to get these larger cards. The game kind of comes with these tarot-size pieces of cardboard that will give you special abilities. I guess they're places of power. And those are going to give you points as well as the cards you play. There's like dragons you can put out. And so there's not a lot of interacting with the other players, but there are suddenly cards that say, oh, I'm going to attack the other player, and they lose their resources. The game is interesting in that there's a lot of cards, a lot of mechanisms, a lot of symbols, which is where Race for the Galaxy fell down for a lot of people. It's so hard to teach mm-hmm. with all the symbols and icons. But here, I feel like after one round, you know the icons.
Yeah, I barely had to reference the card they gave us after the first couple rounds, I would say. It was very intuitive.
It's hard to score a point or 2 points. Like, you see the goal of this is how I'm going to score points. But in the first round, you don't really know what you're trying. Like, it's got a barrier.
Yep.
So that's what pushes it past Jump Drive. It has a barrier of how things are going to go and whatnot. But game one was a little rocky for us.
It was not a good start. I agree. the deck of cards that you start with, is not a set deck. So, in our first game, Brant gave us, he dealt them randomly, which worked wonderfully for him. However, my deck had a lot of cards that did not go together at all. So it was very frustrating for me. And you're also, you have a magician or
Yeah, character
a
hero.
character hero that you start with too. And you can pick from two of those. And again, neither of my heroes that I could pick from went, I had no combos, nothing made sense together. And so it was very frustrating. So then Brant later on was like, "Oh yeah, we were supposed to have drafted, but I didn't think that was necessary. We should do that for the first game." So we had to do a rematch shortly afterwards. But I wasn't very happy with our first play of that game, I'll admit.
Yeah, and it also has preset. They're not preset decks, interesting enough. It's a preset three cards that start in your hand.
Yeah.
And then you draw from your deck there. Yeah, but it's definitely in that same feel. It's funny how it doesn't make me say, oh, I'll just play Roll, or I'll just play Race, or I'll just play Jump Drive. It's like, I want to play them all and this game. I don't know what the appeal is. It's just a different think, even though it's the same kind of level of difficulty,
Yeah.
right?
Yep. I
But
enjoyed it.
it's fun to manipulate the actual resources, and where I love how like cards and dice are your resources in the other ones, it's cool to have actual like wooden pieces in this.
Yes. Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know much about Sandcastle Games. I don't know if this is Tom Lehman's company or a new company that went with him. I don't know. It says Las Vegas, Nevada, so we'll find out. But it's a great first game for them. I
Yeah.
mean, great art, great designer, and great components inside. You got thick wooden tiles, you got cards, which, you know, if you want to sleeve cards, a lot of people do that. You can sleeve them. It's got everything you need in there. There's a pentagon-shaped tray to hold all the components, which are wooden components.
Yep.
So it's a great one that they did there.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, moving on. I think this might be your favorite of the games that we have here. Well, she can let us know. So this is Crusaders, Thy Will Be Done from Tasty Minstrel Games and Seth Jaffe. Seth Jaffe made, oh, what was the space game? Eminent Domain. I don't know if you remember playing that game back in the day. So it was like a deck builder space game. I know you probably put space games out of your mind.
Yeah, I don't really pay attention to that.
But we played that way back. It seems like now. So Crusaders. It's interesting. I feel like the best way to describe this game is he talks about hearing how Stefan Feld was making this game with using the Rondel mechanism from Mancala, and he assumed it was going to be, oh, so you pick a spot, you do that action, and then you move all the little tokens. And that's how Crusaders goes. But then he's referencing Trajan, and then when Trajan came out, it was actually the opposite. You move all of your tokens, and then the spot you end up in, you trigger. So this is Trajan Light, if we're going to make that comparison. I don't think it's quite
No.
there with Trajan,
Right.
which is, of course, a classic game. But basically what's happening, thematically, you're all Crusaders going out. It's not very thematic on the, like, bloody, torturous, disgusting nature of the Crusades, I suppose. But it's you're just going out on a map, and you're defeating tokens that are out there, and you're placing buildings out. The whole thing is run by this Mancala Rondel that's on your board. One of the things we discovered is that the Rondels are supposed to be exactly the same. There's a suggested setup, and there's a make sure yours are the same. And again, we didn't do that, but we played twice in one day.
Yeah.
It's much, much lighter than Trajan, if that is something to compare, which I really want to be careful and stop now on that front. This is really a much friendlier gateway style game. I mean, even in terms of length of time, it took us 30 minutes to play our second
It's
game.
very
It took
fast.
45 minutes to play when I played three player at the store. And so this is the deluxe version that we have, but it has the wooden components, which are delightful,
They are.
that come in the regular box. It has extremely thick cardboard, pieces. I don't know if these would be the same in the the same retail version. And then it just has upgraded coins is the other thing, which people always love coins, but I could take them or leave
I actually love the coins in this game.
them. There it is. Which the coins are actually influence. So that's your goal. You're trying to get the most influence. You're moving around. It's really that rondel, and it's an engine builder because you're building buildings out on the board, and you're increasing the actions you can do on the rondel. So tell us about Crusaders. What you felt about that?
I liked it. It was one where you're kind of competing on the board, but you also have your own space that you're making. It's one of those games where you can set up your strategy and go with it, and there's not a lot of things that get in the way of that, which I appreciate. Yes, I really like that about it.
Cool. You're saying it might not be your favorite amongst all these stacks, but you really enjoyed it?
Yes,
You played
yeah.
again?
Oh, yeah, totally. It might be my second favorite.
Played it twice in one day. So I enjoyed it on our first play. I was happy to play a second time. Play at the store got skunked. It was like one. I'm using that term all of a sudden. That's like my term for this episode.
Apparently,
I'll rename
well.
the episode to Skunked. Well, I guess it actually goes with the
It
losing
goes with
streak
the
thing,
losing
so. Because it
streak.
stinks. No, the game doesn't stink. But it was tough to lose. Like, I think I had 50 points, and the winner had 120 points, which was Brian.
Right.
And it was just, okay, that happened. But I think where this game holds up is that it's short. That it's
Yes.
30 to 45 minutes. Now, price point wise, I think it's $60. $60 for a 30-minute game, but if you can get this game out and play it twice a month, three times a month, then hey, not so bad. So that's going to kind of be there. So it was definitely enjoyable. Love the components. Fun engine build. All those kind of things. But like, if you actually want to go deep with that style game, then it's Trajan all the way.
Yeah.
Which we actually have the new version of Trajan that we need to play, although it's the same as the old version of Trajan. So we basically just need to play it and
Enjoy playing
redecide if Trajan is still as amazing as we
it.
remember it being, or if we have cooled on it in terms of games. But that is Crusaders from Tasty Minstrel Games. All right, a couple more to go here. You ready? All right, next up, we got to play the Villainous expansion, Wicked to the Core. So Villainous, we saw, won the Game of the Year award at the New York Toy Fair. And they had the expansion there, and now we have it. And this is definitely a guilty pleasure game for me, if there ever was one. Like, although it really is a great designed game, it's just, it probably ends up being more random than strategic. You're just
For sure.
drawing through cards and playing things, but I mean, the artwork is amazing. They had somebody kind of redo the Disney art and just up it. So the Wicked to the Core expansion, which I guess is like a Descendants reference, if anybody knows all those Descendants.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I don't know. So I guess it's related because the Evil Queen is in here from Snow White. So obviously Apple,
Right.
that's what's coming. And you played the Evil Queen? Is that who you were?
I was certainly the evil queen.
Do you remember like some of your mechanisms that you had?
Yeah, I had to unlock the dwarf's cottage. Oh, this one was actually very different 'cause I had to make poison.
You evil person, you.
Well,
You
I
were
know.
villainous.
That was the point. I had to make poison instead of I can't remember what the other thing is called that you do. Instead of vanquishing.
Oh,
So the
gotcha.
evil queen doesn't vanquish. She makes poison and she's saving up the poison to poison her enemies instead of vanquish them. And my main goal was to defeat Snow White. So I had to get all the different ingredients to my poisons out there and then unlock the dwarf's cottage, find Snow White, and convince her to eat the apple.
Nice.
Which I did.
Yes. I played as Hades. What is it? Like hey, Hades, Lord of the Dead, good to see you, or whatever the line is from
Yeah.
James Woods there. So Hades didn't feel super different. I had to get four Titans to Mount Olympus, which is on my board, so I had to move them from the underworld to Mount Olympus, and it felt like there were other characters that did similar things. The biggest deal being the other player or my fate deck could kind of knock down the Titans and they'd get stuck, and then I had to reset them and move them on. I also could make the heroes who were attacking me mortal, which meant I could take them out, and any Titans that fought them were not used. Because normally in the game, when you vanquish, you lose your allies or whatever. But Titans and allies are different in mind, so I could have just Cerberus out or the Hydra or whatever, and they could just attack things, and had a lot of like put it back in my hand. So it was more how I vanquish things that was different than the actual how I win mechanism. Totally fun.
Yeah.
enjoyed it. The third one in here is Dr. Facilier, I don't know.
Facilier.
Yeah. From Princess and the Frog, who's a pretty neat villain in terms of all that. Not really all that famous. I'm very upset they don't have Scar. Like, it feels like a blemish on the game to not have Scar yet. And I know there's other people who would argue for others as well. It's funny because Frozen seems like, yeah, add Frozen to the game be huge, but what do you really do? Is Hans the villain? Spoiler, sorry. Like, he's not a great villain.
That's true.
You know, the snow thing is cool, but he's almost friendly by the end, so it becomes tricky to figure that out. I also wonder, do they eventually make Disney villainous heroic? Where you're the heroes playing as the heroes trying to
That
achieve your
feels
objective and things. I mean, would it.
against the point of the game, though.
It is, but do you think there's a way they could work it like
Well, I'm
a villainous
sure
style game
they
that
could
works the other way?
try.
I don't know. It just feels like people would be happier than they could be Snow White. They could be Sleeping Beauty. What would Snow White do? Like, you have to sleep for 7 turns, and then the person to your left has to kiss you, and you wake up and win the game and marry them.
That sounds like a terrible game.
right. Yeah, but this sounds weird, but I love Gaia Project, and this is like mini Gaia Project to me. It's like, get your character, your villain, and figure out how they work. And that's the fun of the game. And Gaia Project is get your, or Terra Mystica, is get
Yeah.
your class or race or whatever and figure out how they work. Now, Gaia Project has a way bigger payoff. Like, okay, I'm figuring this out, I'm scoring points, and I'm building an engine. This is just straight up figure it out. So this
Yeah.
is more that way. I know the biggest thing that happens with this game is the original box played six, and it's just not a six-player game. There's just no way to pay attention to what everybody's doing
Right.
and properly stop everyone, so it just kind of feels like somebody wins by default. Like, oh, we didn't know they were going to win, so they won. But as a two-player game, you absolutely can pay attention to the other person. And even a three-player game, it's not bad at all.
Yeah.
You can ask the people, oh, well, Kathy's taking her turn, I can ask Zephyr or Brian or whoever, hey, what are you doing? How is your thing going? What do I have to do to stop you? And vice versa. And then while we're all taking our turns, you figure it out. And it's not
Yeah.
overwhelming at all. I guess it's a bit lengthy for what seems like a mass market, but I don't care. I don't mind that it goes on for 45. I mean, with two, we were probably 30 to 45 minutes.
Yeah.
With three, we famously played a six-player game in 1 hour because I just wouldn't let anybody ask any questions about other people's so that it would finish, because I didn't want to
Just go.
play a six-player game for 2 hours and people hate the game.
Right.
At least at this point, they hated me for telling them, go, 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 go. And I'd rather that than the game gets the negative. But I know for a lot of people, they just can't stand that game because of the length.
Yeah.
Awesome. We played Fine Sand from Freedom and Freese. So Fine Sand is not a deck builder. It's a deck
Destroyer.
destroyer or deconstructor. Really, it's all about reading this back, which is phenomenal. Will you read the beginning here
I
to
would
us?
love to. Fine sand. You are at the beach during your vacation. Everything is peaceful and in harmony. Out of a pure love of life, you start to build a sandcastle. Wait, what are your neighbors doing? Everywhere, sandcastles rise up. But it was you who wanted to build the best, highest, biggest sandcastle. Suddenly, everybody is in the middle of a competition. Everybody builds with the materials on hand. Who will deplete all their materials and win the sandcastle competition? Every player for themselves and all against each other. That's what's going on here.
Yeah. So good. So the theme barely is in the game. However, what's great is now that you know you're in this like epic sandcastle competition, the cards and a lot of it is all these construction trucks that are bringing in sand and removing sand and all these things. So, very simple game. In order to win, you have to have the least cards left in your deck. So you start with a 30-card deck, and you're trying to get to zero cards. The lowest score wins, a la golf. On your turn, you have a green section that says draw this many cards. So it starts at two. Then you have a choice. Do I want to build a card or draw two more cards? So I can pick build or draw. And then at the end of my turn, I have to discard down to three cards in my hand. Every card is worth a coin, like Race for the Galaxy or whatever. And all the cards have numbers on them that are cost to build. When you build a card, you add it to one of those locations. So now my build one might be build two, or my draw two might be draw three, or my discard down to three might be discard down to four. So I can have more cards in my hand. And then some cards, like I said, are worth two or three coins, so they're worth a little bit more. There are also sandcastles, which are just dead cards that you got to build to get out of there. The last mechanism in the game is I can, every turn, take one card, put it face down, and pass it to my neighbor. But the cards only get passed if everybody puts a card face down. So you can wait a couple rounds until that happens, then you draw that card and put it in your discard pile. So you're passing the cards you don't want off to your neighbor. And that's kind of the interaction in the game. And then you just go. The turns are simultaneous. So everybody's a little wooden disc. They put it in. They take their turn, and then they put the wooden disc out. It is very basic, but it is just pure engine build. And I really am enjoying this game.
It's a fun little puzzle.
It is. It's just a puzzle with such limited interaction, but it's so fun. And then it's a race game, so you're racing against your neighbors to see where they're at. I've also been playing the solo campaign. I think I played last night, and Kathy's like, if you keep playing that, I'm not going to play you because you're going to get too good at the game.
Right.
So it's a Fable game like Fabled Fruit, which is a favorite of ours, for a family game. I actually don't know that this is a family game inherently. Like, it feels like what you do is very family game friendly, but being good at it...
Right. It's complicated.
Yeah, it's got an arc to, like, why am I doing this versus that? So I have to see when we get a chance to play it with Zephra and see how she does. I'm not sure. But it is short enough. It is in the 30-minute range that it'll hold her attention. But I think the better players, the better think will win, which makes it a strategy game in terms of that. But anyway, it's a Fable game, like I was saying. So after you play one hand, you shuffle up your cards, you get rid of three, and you add three Fable cards. And everybody gets rid of the same three and adds the same three. So then you have equal decks. And you play through. And those later cards are pretty interesting. They definitely change up the strategy. Oh, discard cards to get rid of a card, etc. Things like that. So that's what's going on. I'm really liking this game. I feel like I'm liking it more than I will ultimately.
Right.
It's kind of a hot game right now. Mm-hmm. But once I play through it, or we play through it, or whatever, it might get set aside a little bit. Ultimately, I think I like Fabled Fruit better for a family game.
Yeah, that seems more family friendly.
This one is neat. Freeman Freeze has a lot of really unique ideas, and I feel like the popular thing right now is to kind of down his games because they don't work out. 504 was 504 games in the same box.
Yeah.
But the joke is always like none of them were good, or just if I play six games at all are just kind of mediocre, why wouldn't I just go play one that I already know is good? And some of those other things that just haven't quite worked out. But, of course, Power Grid is a super famous, popular game. Friday, the little solo card game, and now mm-hmm. this, I feel like it's really enjoyable. I mean, there's not much meat on the bones, so it's not thinky that way, but neat game. Yeah, and then last up, we just have been playing a lot of Concordia.
Yes, and this one's my favorite from the pile.
Oh, right, of course, yes. A lot of Concordia with Venus.
Yes.
Which adds just quickly, Concordia is a trade in the Mediterranean game. You're moving workers around, and the whole thing is a rondel of cards. You're playing cards to do various actions, trade resources, collect resources, move around and build stuff, and score points. What's interesting is all the cards have point scoring on them, and then you can draft new cards. So you construct your own scoring engine.
Yep.
And there's one card you can play, the Tribune card, to get all your cards back. So that's Concordia, really famous game. If you haven't played it, highly suggest it.
Yeah.
Super smooth. Venus includes a card that says, hey, for every region where you do have two houses, you score bonus points. And it used to be you want to be every province. It used to be you wanted to be in a bunch of different provinces, but this card now brings in the settle near each other, which is a nice mechanism. Also brings in team play, which we haven't done.
Yeah, we should
We've
try
been
that
playing two
soon.
player, so. And then we added in the salsa expansion, which is salt or salted. And
Yep.
salt is a wild resource. It also had these forum tiles, which basically you can buy upgrades, special powers that are just for you. So you said it's your favorite of the pile. Tell us what you love about Concordia, the expansions, whatever.
It's another one that there's just a lot of different ways to get points. I love how open that is. The resource collecting. You get to pick what you want and how you want to collect it. It's all just very wide open. So it's very interesting. It's fun to try to figure out different strategies, like, oh, maybe I'll try to get a lot of cards in my deck this turn, or maybe I'll try to just settle and make towns everywhere this game, or I'll just keep collecting resources and selling them for money this time. Like, there's so many different ways to get points. I like that it doesn't seem like there's one, like, win strategy to it.
Yeah, and it's funny, it feels like there should be. Like somebody should have figured out and be like, oh, obviously you do this, but then we've got six maps.
Right.
So it's going to change based on that. I mean, the cards kind of come out in a different order, so that can change things. But you adapt your strategy. Oh, and then the tiles change on the map.
Right.
So there's just enough thought process to the design of the game. And it is butter smooth.
Yeah.
I mean, this truly is an elegant game. The
Yes.
way you play, the think, you basically don't have downtime. Maybe in a four player or six player game with
Ooh, I don't
teams,
know if I'd want to
it could get a little
do
long, but in a two, three player game, there's no reason you can't be thinking. Even if you know your next turn, you can absolutely start thinking about your turn after that.
Right.
And your plans may have to change a little tactically, but it's got both the tactics and the strategy
Yep.
perfect. You can definitely say, these are my next three moves I want to make. And then somebody makes them, oh, wait, let me adapt and put this card in here and go this way. And you don't have to wait till you get to the end to reset your hand, too. And that's where the forum tiles are interesting, is they give you bonuses for resetting your hand. So suddenly playing all of your cards out is not your best choice necessarily. I'm pretty sure it's a top 10 game for me now that I've been playing it. I feel like there's like 26 games that are in my top 10. But it's definitely up there, and this will be the largest box traveling with us this week,
Yeah.
because it's a school night game.
Yeah.
It's now we know the game so well, and with the two of us, it's like an hour 15.
Yep.
It's not really overwhelming. Sitting down and learning something and playing it can be 45 minutes, and this has got amazing strategy and is not like, okay, I really got to prepare myself to play Concordia tonight. It's like, oh, great, let's play it.
Right.
We had a free afternoon, and you just said, oh, grab Concordia. And we played with new rules, and it was fine.
Yeah.
So, anyway, if you haven't tried Concordia, highly, highly, highly recommend it. Amazing game. I think even if Euros aren't your thing, and bland-looking games aren't your thing, this one is worth your time, because it just works so well. Agree, disagree.
Agreed. I love it.
Awesome. All right, we're going to break now, and I'm going to talk about some Kickstarter games that I've gotten in that are up on Kickstarter now. And then we're gonna come back because Kathy wants to talk about.
Losing streaks.
All right, we'll see you in a few. Alrighty, I just want to take a chance to talk about some Kickstarter games. One that is on Kickstarter now, and one that will be on Kickstarter very shortly, possibly by the time this... a little bit after this episode drops. And yeah, Kickstarter's just been an interesting thing with the store. We've been backing a lot more Kickstarters and things that we've had available and working through that. And I'm really glad that Kickstarter companies are starting to focus on the retail end, because it's one thing to get your game published and made, and that's neat, and that some people want to buy it, and you can make some money off that. But if you can get a game into a store, then even more people can come across that and, you know, kind of be proud of your game and move with it like that. So it's been really nice to have a lot of retail pledges and be able to do this. And then podcast-wise, to have companies that have, you know, invested in us, for lack of a better term. I don't charge anybody for a Kickstarter preview, but they send me the game and they spend time, you know, explaining the game and making videos so I can know how to play the game and all those kind of investments. I don't literally mean a monetary one. So first game we have here is called Nerd Words, specifically Nerd Words Science, and this is from Genius Games. So Genius Games, I've covered a lot of their games in the past, Cytosis, Ion, they have the game Periodic that was on Kickstarter, and Subatomic, which is a really neat deck builder, and really love Genius Games. They are bringing educational games to the public, and rather than focusing so much on the education, they're focusing on the game and then making sure the education is wrapped around it so that it's fun first. And I think that's really important, and I think that a lot of these can be used in the classroom. As a teacher, I hesitate sometimes on the length of the game. So like Cytosis is a pretty long game. You'd really have to have several copies and have a setup for that, but like Ion would work phenomenally because it's basically Sushi Go, and would really teach those terms well. So I think they've done a good job. Anyway, so Nerd Words is a word game. And so what's happening is you divide up into teams, and each player gets two cards that has three different scientific terms on it. So you've got things like boiling point, nuclear meltdown, membrane, cytosis, these kind of words that you would see in a science classroom. Gives you a brief definition. And one person is going to be the clue giver, and they're going to actually bet on how many points they think, they're going to bet a number of points that they'll lose or gain if anybody guesses it. So in this game, everybody's guessing, both teams. And then they're going to give everybody a clue, and when you give the clue, it has to contain, has to start with a letter that's in the word. So you're not only giving a clue, you're saying this letter must be in the word. So it's kind of a double clue. And then all the other teams, once they see that, they're going to have a timer, and you can play with three teams. I should mention that as well. And they're going to kind of discuss amongst themselves and make a guess, and then they're going to place a bet. Like, ooh, we think that we're right based on this numbers. Then people are going to reveal, and they're going to say, oh, we bet this much is what we think it is. If nobody guessed, everybody's going to lose their points. But if anybody got it right, in the first round, you gain 4 points automatically plus your bid. So you kind of have a chance to earn a lot of points. And then the clue giver gets points as well. So there's a lot of points to go around here, and then it kind of drops in value all the way to the end. If nobody gets it after 4 rounds, you're going to lose a point. Sorry, on the 4th round, you're going to take an opportunity to guess, and the clue you give must start with the letter of the word. So you're really giving a big clue. These three letters are in it, and it starts with this letter, and here's 4 clues. So the odds of that are pretty slim, but it's interesting. It's hard to explain, but I like how they've created a unique system. I haven't seen this system in anything else, and it's really neat. And I think, you know, for a science classroom, this just seems great. It seems great that you could use this to get to know terms, like your kids could get to know terms. I think high schoolers would be down for playing something like this. And taking it, you could take your code names words and do this. You could take another classroom and do similar kind of things. So I really like the idea, and I think it's nice that they've created their own system. Like, hey, it's under the word game category, but it feels like its own thing. It's a little convoluted to get all that together, and it's really based on the fact that people will get to those terms. I just played with a broad selection of people, and they were generally able to know all the words. So we didn't feel like a lot of the words were super specific, so that was nice. But that is Nerd Words from Genius Games, and that is up on Kickstarter now. The next one is from Lucky Duck Games, and this is Kingdom Rush. Kingdom Rush is based on a well-known app. It's a tower defense, and I actually downloaded the app and played the app. That's pretty fun. Really a basic tower defense game. And so this is a cooperative... it's a cooperative tower defense game that you're playing here. And so in Kingdom Rush, everybody gets a hero, and you're trying to play these tower cards out on the board to attack the cards. And so the cards are basically made up of 16 different squares, and you have to like cover the goblins with these polyominoes. That was the other piece I wanted to say, that it's a cooperative polyomino tower defense game. And you're playing these polyominoes, and they basically have to be in the same orientation as how you launch them from the towers, and then everybody picks up the towers. But what's really neat is if you don't want to play a tower, you can pass it to your neighbor, and it will upgrade the tower, which is really cool. So you're trying to make that decision of should we use this now or should we upgrade the tower? Because then it will be permanently upgraded. What you're trying to do is cover all those, and then you get diamonds. Diamonds you can use to buy hero upgrades or to buy new towers that you can put out on the board. And if you don't destroy a tray, that tray or card, they're in trays, will move up. And you're trying to, and then a new one will spawn. You're trying to destroy the portals that come out. So there's these portals that eventually show up. And what's unique about portals is they say, oh, you have to attack with like a level 2 or 3 tower. And the tower that attacks this will be destroyed, as well as you can't cover the center spot. And then your heroes can actually move, and your heroes are a 2x2 square. So they can step on a tile and eliminate those, so they can kind of be used, as well as using all your special powers. Really enjoyed this when I was playing solo. I was playing kind of two-handed, and there was a lot of thinking, ooh, what are we going to do in Pathies? When I played with four at the store, it slowed down a little bit, and people were kind of hesitant. We were also very overpowered with four. Like, we could do everything without really thinking it out, which could be a good or bad. But I just have the first three from kind of like a tutorial. So this is like a 12-mission campaign, and the first three are kind of teaching you the game. So that's what I have right now in terms of that. But I really enjoyed this game. I thought there was a lot of good think. The cooperative elements were there. Probably a little more like, let me tell you what to do, than you kind of decide. But you're holding your hand of cards, and you choose when you want to do each thing. So it's more like, hey, do you have a marksman? Could you play a marksman now? Or, oh, what's your special power? There's a little more of that talking and chatting. So with four on that first teach, it was a little rough. I probably should have played the one with no heroes and then had everybody go move up to the heroes. But I wanted the heroes to be out because I wasn't sure I'd play it more than once there. But really neat. I don't know in the structure of a 12 campaign where they're going to go with this, what they'll do. This is launching on April 9th, so a little bit later than when I am chatting about this. But it'll be interesting to see. I imagine adding new scenarios, more heroes. There's tons of stuff to add on Kickstarter. So I can see this one really being a Kickstarter game and getting people excited. And it's a great, like, family slash strategy game. It fits right in that category, and it's cooperative, which I know a lot of people like. So I really think this is something to check out. I think it's a really nice game that Lucky Duck has here with Kingdom Rush, and I hope it does well. So that's that little break, and those are the things you can find on Kickstarter. Nerd Words from Genius Games, Kingdom Rush from Lucky Duck Games. On with the show. Hey everyone, we're back. All right. So Kathy made this kind of offhanded comment recently, and she's like, "Man, because you got the BG Stats app."
I did get the BG Stats app.
And she's tracking her plays, and she's like, "Man, I am on a losing streak." And definitely when it's the two of us, you win very often.
Right.
It's like 70-30. Probably I'm looking up rules, I'm trying to figure things out, I'm not very good.
Don't make excuses.
Whatever it is. And then you probably tend to play games that are like group games at 5, 6, 7 people, and at that point, win loss isn't really like,
Right.
code names. Hey, we won, you don't even track it, right? Mysterium, you probably have a decent idea if you won or lost. But if you're not the ghost, you just don't count the game, I imagine. So those games, right, they inherently have no value to win or lose.
Right.
Often you're just really playing to play. So suddenly when you're in that, like, oh, there's 3 and 4 players in a game, even if you win well, you win 40, 50% of the time. And so you notice there was this losing streak. So what do you feel about losing streaks? What's kind of your focus, your comment on that?
Yeah, I have to say, I love the BGG app. It's so fun. I love that it keeps track of everything I've played, and I can just glance and see who won and the scores and where I've played and who I've played with. I think that's really fun. So yeah, I did. I was looking at it and I was like, wow, I've lost a lot of games lately. And yeah, we talked about how, like, we don't really celebrate or moan our wins and losses that much
Right.
when we play games. It was more like, oh, was that fun or not?
Yeah, I'm a huge evaluator of the game, not how I did in the game.
Right. I mean, it sucks to lose terribly or be skunked, apparently, is the word of the day. But as that doesn't happen that often, it's more like, oh, what could I have done to do better
Right.
or anything like that. But then when you notice, like, wow, I've lost a lot of games in a row. I don't know. There's just something about that that's like, oh, I really need to play something I can win.
Yeah, coming in last of four people hurts a lot more too than losing by 2 points in a two-player game, right? Like, so that part can be a little bit tougher. So I feel like it's important when a lot of people playing game board games, especially, like I find, don't focus on the winning of the game, you know? And so then when somebody really does get upset or like feels like they're a poor sport, it is even more noticeable in the board game community. A lot of times you'll even have the like, oh, thanks for teaching, thanks for playing, thanks for, like, people are thanking each other more at the end. And then when somebody really like storms off and they're upset, you're like, oh, wow, like I guess they just, but it makes sense in the sports world. It's like win the whole thing or, you know, like NCAA tournament, everybody's upset except one team at the end. And it's like, we definitely could have done better. We should have. It was an upset, all these things, right? And in games, it's often just, oh, did we have fun? And so many games now are building in like catch-up mechanisms and things to keep everybody in the game, because I don't want to play a 4-hour game where I'm out in after 45 minutes and now it's like, dang, zone out, or I'm winning by a mile and now I just have to wait for everybody to, you know, helplessly take their turns so I can win. But I do think it's important to recognize the emotion that does come with losing. There is an emotion to losing. It's not fun. It's not a good thing. The same as it can be elating to win, winning an exciting at the very end style game, or commanding the entire game can be like, oh, I got this game. I know what's going on, right? You feel like I figured out this puzzle or this strategy or whatever. Recently, I won Space Base with the You Win card, and everybody at the table was like, oh, that's so cheap. Like, you just set up an engine and then won with the You Win card. Like, that game shouldn't be in there. And you know, they were just kind of, it was tough for them, like, because you weren't doing what you're supposed to do in the game. And it's like, well, no, I was doing the other thing that the game says you can do. And to me, it was really neat. Like, ooh, I figured this out. I made this card work. Who knows? Is it just that card comes up and somebody grabs it and they're going to win? Or is it actually you have to make it work, you know? So I think it's important to acknowledge the emotion, and a losing streak can be even tougher. And losing to one person in particular over and over can be really frustrating, you know, the same game. And so I could see a lot of more of that in like a CCG community, Destiny, Keyforge, that kind of stuff, where it's like, oh my gosh, I keep playing this person and losing to them. And
And it's funny because, well, I guess it's kind of normal, but I've just played so many different games lately. So it's not even like, oh, it's just that game I'm not good at. It's like, oh, there's no game I'm good at, apparently. So yeah, so then when there is that one or two wins in there, it makes me feel so much better. Like, okay, it's not the end of the world. Not that it is anyway.
Yeah, that probably is a big part of it. We don't play the same game. We do play them twice. We're getting better at
We're
it
getting better at
now.
that.
But we don't play them every week or every month, you know. We played Smash Brothers Ultimate, whatever it is, Switch Smash Brothers, and we had played that. We were both super handicapped against our friends when we were teenagers or early 20s or whatever it was, and they destroyed us even though we had a handicap, but we still kind of had fun. But when we played it recently, I literally had only played the game for like 3 days. And you went up against me like, I don't understand this game. I can't push any buttons. And it felt like this little 3-minute match, and we're going to do it over and over and over again. And if I beat you 3 in a row, you're like, this game, I don't want to do this.
Right.
Right? There was something to that. Like, it got frustrating immediately right off the bat versus a 2-hour game that you could lose to somebody over and over. But you feel like you put strategy and, oh, okay, I came up short.
Right.
I don't know. There's a different element. So, yeah, I think it's kind of important to think about those things and how can a losing streak affect you, and is there a point you should just kind of walk away from games if that's going to bother you, or can it be a motivator? Like, okay, I've been losing a whole bunch, so we're playing this game now.
It kind of makes me want to say, all right, we are going to play this one game over and over and over until I win.
Yeah.
And whether you just get bored and stop trying or... No, I wouldn't want to win like that. That's another thing.
Yes.
I don't ever, ever want to just be allowed to win any game.
Right.
That's the worst.
Well, and I never do.
No.
I never would.
No, no.
The interesting part is sometimes playing against you too, I feel like even if I'm winning, I have to win harder. Because if there's any sense that I'm letting up and that you sneak in at the end because I didn't see something, I'm going to be in trouble. Like, I was winning by 75 points, so I figured I would just kind of pass my turn. And then you're like, but then I did this thing for 80 points and I wouldn't have. Go back and take your turn. You should have had 7 points and beat me. And it's like, okay. So I feel like even when I'm winning, I have to play my absolute best. And if I end up skunking you, let's keep getting that term in there, so be it, or vice versa.
Yeah.
Like, neither of us are going to take it easy on each other.
Right.
I do also notice, the funny part that I notice, and I don't think we do anything wrong, but we do take-see-back-sees a bunch.
We do.
And very casually, because usually it's easily calculatable. As long as you didn't flip a card, gain a random thing, wait to see what the other player did. Like, oh, I should have gotten 2 coins. Oh, take your 2 coins. Like,
right, we do that.
3 turns ago, I should have gotten 2. But then when I go other places, I have to be careful playing at a table of 4 and telling one person, even though they're new, they haven't been to the store, they haven't part of the group, oh, I think I was supposed to have 3 coins. People, whoa. And people at the table can really not be down with that. And right. I have to be careful of not, oh, yeah, take 4 coins. Like, you know, like being too fair about it. And that's fine. It, you know, people have different personality types and different things. And wait, if they didn't get it, they didn't get it. Like, that's...
I feel like as long as it's acknowledged and accepted which way you're gonna go with it, then it's fine either way. Like, yeah, I've definitely played away from our house with people, and I realized things later, and yeah. I would never think to, like, go back and fix it or whatever. But because that is our accepted way of playing, it's more of the challenge of the game of, ooh, how many points can I get and how good is the strategy, rather than did we,
right,
like,
dot every I,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, did we reference every rule, and then if it wasn't clear, go to the BGG forums, and then if it wasn't clear, email the designer and tweet out to them, and then sit and wait for their reply with the game in a vacuum-sealed room. You know, like, okay, now we can get back to it. We have the official answer on this rule. I very much, like, I'm okay with looking up rules for a minute, and after that, it's like, let's just make a call.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of that. Although, funny enough, talking about getting rules wrong, 2018 was, like, my year of just shattering rules. Like, I felt like I just couldn't teach games anymore. There were so many major rules I got wrong in games. And I'm trying to be better about it now. What's tricky is, I'll say, okay, I've got these 7 games. I'm ready to play. I know every rule. I played them all solo last night. And somebody say, well, what about this 8th game over here? This looks interesting. Oh, okay, yeah, I can teach that. I take it out. I miss one major rule because I wasn't ready for that game. As much as I know rules, you know?
Yeah.
And we played That's Time fair. Of Crisis, and I didn't care what place I came in. I got 2 rules wrong. We were able to fix them, and it was fine, and everybody was great. I play with a lot of people who are totally cool with, like, let's just go with this with the rule. And I really appreciate that. But I think I came in 3rd. I didn't care about 3rd. I was mad that I got rules wrong. I didn't want other people's experience to be, like, tattered by my,
Yeah.
you know, or ruined or whatever. That was a bigger piece. So let me ask you this question. Would you rather lose the same game 10 times in a row or 10 different games?
Oh.
Because that's the same losing streak, but is it the same losing streak?
It's not the same at all. It's totally different to lose a game you've just learned versus a game you know.
Yes.
But it's highly dependent on the game.
Okay.
'Cause there are games that I'm just not good at and hate, and there are games that I'm just not good at and really like and just want to keep playing anyway. I'm also good at some games, so I feel like I should say that in the middle of my losing streak over here, but
So are you taking the political way out and saying no
it
answer?
depends. I can't just pick it. It depends completely.
Well, my answer is I'd rather lose Keyforge 10 times in a row with the same deck, because then I can blame the deck. Oh, this is just a bad deck. I figured it out. Or your deck is cheap. It's overpowered, right? No, I think I'd rather lose 10 different games.
Yeah.
Because I think what you said, now, if they're 10 games, I guess that I've played 10 times each, and it's my 10th play of all of them,
Right.
then that could feel a little bit different. Like, ah, oh, I should really know this game, and I'm losing them over and over and over again. And the length of those games certainly matters, right?
Well, yeah.
Losing 10 2 to 3 hour Euros in a row is gonna suck over like a month versus 10 games of Skull in a row in the same night,
Right.
you know, while hanging out with friends somewhere. That's, you're not even gonna feel that. A six
Yeah.
player game that you never won. You're gonna be like, eh, my odds were 1 in 6 and I didn't win in 10 games,
Right.
in terms of that. But I think I'd rather lose 10 different games than lose one game. Although, if I lost one game 10 times in a row, I could just swear that game off.
That's true.
I'm just done with this
It
game. I
might be
lost it 10 times in a row.
time to let it go.
Or it just needs to be so much fun. Like, time's up, I might lose 10 times in a row.
Oh, well, yeah.
And I'll just keep playing because it's totally not the point of the game, right?
Right.
In terms of that. Awesome. Well, let us know about losing streaks you've had or emotions you've had with that. Or just answer my question. Would you rather lose 10 games in a row, 10 of the same game, or 10 different games in a row? In a row is key right there. You can email us at portalgamepodcast@gmail.com or tweet at me at portalgaming60 on Twitter and let me know what you think about that. But I think with that, we're going to wrap this episode up. This is episode number 120. That's because a droid don't pull people's arms out of their sockets when they lose. That is our episode because Kathy can get quite upset. So we let
What?
the Wookiee win. All right. That's it for this episode. Thanks so much. More reviews to come. Brian and I need to do an episode and pile on the same number of reviews as well. We've got Welcome to Centerville that Brian and I will talk about. I'll talk about Time of Crisis. Brian and I played a huge game of Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea. Six people at the store, you know, 4 hours. So I wanted to talk about that a couple episodes ago, but I want to talk about it with Brian, so we're saving that. And so many others. So many other games and so many things. And yeah, the school year is going to kind of wrap up, and then we're going to jump into con season and tabletop day and all those kind of things. So tabletop day will be June 1st. I'm hoping to be at Dice Tower Con in July. Signs are looking up for that. Gen Con in August, Vonner Con in October. Kathy started to go like, and PAX Unplugged will be Kathy again this year in Philadelphia. You said you enjoyed that one.
I just enjoyed it.
Yeah, so she's going back.
Oh.
Yeah, she's really excited for that.
Awesome.
Yeah, so we'll be at all those and various other things and see how we do. That's it. Episode number 20. Sorry, did you have any last advice on moving to me all the time? When you beat me? Don't make brain cry. Alright. This is episode 120 of the Portal Games Podcast. I am your host, The Brent.
And your co-host, Kathy.
And until Until next time, we hope you step.